play action fake. Right side throw, touchdown! Kansas City! McCole Hardman! McCole Hardman! A back-to-back Super Bowl champion, and it is the Kansas City Chiefs!
Hello and welcome to another Arrowhead Sprout podcast. We are back. We are 1 week away from the draft. We're going to do our live draft show next week. And so this week, I was going to say I've got two draft experts in. Can I call you both draft experts? Does that work?
Probably not.
No. Two people who watch college football. How about that?
That'll do.
Yeah,
who have watched college football at some stage? Is that sufficient?
Maybe 10 years' time, I might say that I'm very good at it, but it takes a long time.
So for now, we've got the not very good at it dulcet tones of Chris. Chris, how are you doing, man?
Good evening. I'm all right. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Excellent. And we've got a new voice on the show here. The subtitles available on YouTube for anyone who can't understand the Scouse accents. But we're joined by Phil McCann, who is an expert at organising Super Bowl meetups in Liverpool, specifically. Phil, I did give you a shout out. The dedication of the amount of bars you must have tried to come up with the right one for that was a credit to you. It really was. But welcome on board. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, no, I'll take that. I listened to that episode as well, actually. So thank you for that.
Well, that was the one you listened to, was it?
Just the one. Yeah, just that segment.
That's as much as anyone needs to listen to. So we're going to do draft talk today. With the live draft next week, we're going to talk through kind of what the Chiefs need, what they might want, and then who there might be kind of as a result of that. So I suppose let's go, Phil, to start out. What do you think the Chiefs must get out of this draft?
Must get. I've written down a little list, and I think must have. I'm nervous about wide receiver, left tackle, cornerback, and edge. They're the four positions that I think are a must see to. And then I'm looking at where we're picking, what trade-ups we can do, and that sort of stuff. And the one position that sort of stands out to me is left tackle. I think without trading up, I'm nervous about the left tackles that we'd have available to us at our current picks. And for that reason alone, I'm really hoping that we re-sign Donovan Smith or we sign a veteran left tackle, because I don't think the draft is our answer for that position. The other three positions, so your wide receiver, cornerback, and edge, I do think we can solve in the draft. There are must needs, in my opinion. And I'll go into a bit more detail about how I want to pick up those positions, but I think everything else is a luxury. Guard, you could argue guards a must need, but I don't think it's as vital as those four positions right now.
Would you be comfortable with Donovan Smith as your starting left tackle again? Because that's kind of the question when we were WhatsApping this afternoon was kind of came to my mind was, I'm sure he's only a phone call away. Is that enough?
If we're going to jump straight into it, for me, we won the Super Bowl with what we've already had, and that was Donovan Smith and Wanya Morris. We won the Super Bowl with those two players. So are they good enough? Am I comfortable? They've proven that they're good enough, and they've proven that I can trust them. But there's a couple of names that stand out in the draft I wouldn't be comfortable to go into the season starting with them, but I would like to get them on board to add a bit of depth to the position to help out. And one of those names is the likes of Patrick Paul, which I'm sure has been linked to the Chiefs a lot, but just the size of him, he's a dice throw. He isn't the finished product, but he looks like he's got the physicality and the size and the weight to be the finished product. So if we were to draft somebody like Patrick Paul wherever he would drop, and we go into the season with Donovan Smith and Wanya Morris that can sort of flit into guard if we need him as well, that would make me more comfortable. So that's the long answer. Short answer is, I think with the evidence that we've had last season, Donovan Smith deserves our trust.
That's reasonable. Chris, have you got any kind of any other opinion to fill there, or are you kind of on board with that?
I guess it's a two-part, really, isn't it? I guess the there's the talking about the needs and the question, I guess, at left tackle about Donovan Smith and or Wanya Morris. For me, I think I'd be inclined to agree with the needs that, for me, we do need another wide receiver. We're a little bit bare and a little bit unproven, I think, in some areas and, you know, kind of light on experience. But I think, as opposed to what Phil had said about the kind of guards thing, we lost Nick Allegretti to the Commanders. I think we need to replace him. I think, you know, there's question marks over whether we're going to keep Trey Smith. I think I'm one of these that I don't like to go into a new season picking somebody to start straight away. Or you know, you could always argue, I've said it before myself as well, that you address needs in free agency and draft is for future potential. You know, you don't go into the draft looking to fulfill a need. But unless you're at the top of the class, of course. But I think for me, that I'd rather have this, you know, select somebody that gives you that versatility, maybe they can play quite a number of different positions across the offensive line, give them that year in the within the organization behind other players. If they play some snaps, great, but no pressure on them. I do think we need to replace that kind of swing guard kind of tackle in or even center in Nick Allegretti. But I think wide receiver, left tackle, or some may look at it to say even right tackle for developmental purposes, not necessarily somebody unless you trade up. As Phil said, I said the same thing myself today. If you don't get one of the top six tackles, I think I wouldn't either be comfortable going into the season starting somebody outside of those top six. I think they're all developmental pieces. But there's always been that talk of kicking Juwan Taylor to the left and having somebody else come in at right tackle. So left tackle, right tackle, whichever, depending on how the Chiefs look, how they want to go. But I think, yeah,
corner. Is there a position where we need to draft a starter? Because what you're saying there of you don't want to go into the draft having a need. Is there anywhere that we need a starter? I'm not sure there is.
I don't know. I don't think there is anywhere we need a starter as such. I mean, like, how does the reigning Super Bowl champions turn around and say that they need to replace a starter? I mean, yeah, you could argue we've lost the Jarry Sneed, but, you know, you've got a ready-made replacement as your cornerback one and Trent McDuffie. Nazi Johnson was coming on an absolute treat before he got injured. You know, they're not fantastic players by any stretch of the imagination, but solid players in Jalen Watson and Joshua Williams. You know, there's... You know, again, you could bring in another cornerback that could push those guys for starting reps at some point in the future. But I don't think we need to replace Sneed with a starter. We've got good enough depth as it is. There's no way I can see where there's any holes where I would say, look, we need to kind of select a starter then. I think at 32 as well, you're not really in a position where you can pick a starter for me. Not necessarily. I think if you're picking top 15 or top 10 in the first round, you pretty much got a damn good chance of picking somebody who can walk straight in as a starter day one, and they're going to be effective. You know, you'll see this draft class is just fantastic. It's littered with depth and talent. And I think for me, those top 10, top 15 teams will pick players, will walk in, start day one, and they'll be good at what they do. But we don't have that luxury for one. Two, we don't need to do it, I don't think. So would I be happy with...
No, go on. I was just going to slightly disagree and say, obviously, outside the left tackle, would Edge raise some concern with a Menahue's injury? And we didn't see enough of Felix to really be comfortable going into the season with him as a starter. Would you say that is a need?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, it depends how long Charles is going to be injured for. Because, I mean, like, it's one of those where, you know, the Chiefs very much now, they don't just have players, or they don't have many players who were kind of, for me, just pure Edge prospects. They kind of have that inside-outside versatility. So, you know, George Karlaftis, you can kick him inside if you want. Charles Emenihu, you can kick him inside if you want. You're not talking about really having players who are kind of like that 7-tech, kind of wide nine kind of speed rusher. They're more, you know, the Chiefs and Spags have got that particular scheme fit. They like players generally that's kind of certain 34-inch arm length, 260-pound power edges. But they did bring in, you know, BJ Thompson as a kind of who doesn't fit that mold. And, you know, they kind of broke the mold again a little bit by bringing Felix Anadiko Zamarin, who isn't really that kind of stereotype that they look for. But I think mainly that they'd be happy with those two in terms of those smaller edges. But I don't know. I think they quite often would kick these guys inside, outside, you know. They might need somebody else, not necessarily a starter, but I think it wouldn't surprise me if somebody like, I don't know, Darius Robinson was picked up by us, who's got that inside, outside versatility as well. You know, it really wouldn't surprise me. Or one of the Murphy brothers later on or something like that from UCLA. But I don't see it as a need that we need a starter right now. But I certainly do think we need depth there, somebody who could provide or play meaningful snaps this year, definitely, rather than someone who's going to sit and not play anything for the year, pretty much what Felix Anadiku-Uzama did last year. Yeah, he played some snaps, but...
cost me $275,000.
Defensive player of the year.
Rookie. I digress there. I would say edge is a need in some form, yes, because you don't know when Charles Ahmanu is coming back, and you don't know what he's coming back as well. Like, is he 100% of the Charles Ahmanu that he was last year? Is he 80%? Like,
you just
don't know. And I love Mike Diner. He's back. That's fantastic. I've come around to Carl Aftis. I wasn't the biggest fan in his first season, but he had a great second season.
Yeah.
So I'm happy with the two of them to start with. Felix showed me next to nothing. And then Charles Ahmanu's coming back from an injury.
Yeah.
So, Phil, I see where you're coming from there. I think it... I don't know whether it's a need, but it's certainly a... you could do with another body, whether that's a... like, I don't know what veterans are out there, but...
is Clowney still out there?
No, he's gone to somewhere.
Panthers? Who's the other one I'm thinking? Gakwe.
Yeah, Panthers, he did. Yeah, Panthers, you're right, yeah.
Is it Ngakoue that's still out there?
Oh, I hope so. He was on my... I'd really like him to...
I always tend to like... I think they sound like similar players, Ngakoue and Clowney. They kind of seem like similar players to me. I've always thought of them as kind of similar players, but you know, I don't know. I think one of them, I think, is still available. I'm not sure.
I'm sure Clowney. What Phil's right. Clowney went. He I want to say $20 million for 2 years to the Panthers. As I'm just trying to load up defensive line, free agents, unrestricted free agents.
I think Chris nailed it on the head, though. I mean, where we are, and obviously the Super Bowl champions, we've not exactly lost any real key players that we haven't already replaced, minus left tackle. I think we can all agree left tackle's the glaringly obvious one.
Yeah,
Yannick Ngakoue is still a free agent.
He is.
Emmanuel Ogba. Give me Emmanuel Ogba back on a cheap, yeah, on a cheap deal. I'll take it.
Absolutely. If you want to give me a 1 year, $8 million, $10 million Emmanuel Ogba, I could buy into that. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, take it. But I think, obviously we've not lost somebody that we haven't replaced except left tackle, which is the glaring obvious need. But we're in that luxury position where the players that we think of as needs aren't desperate needs. You're right. So need, I would say, left tackle is probably the glaring position.
I think that's the argument for Edge. Sorry, just very quickly, Neil.
I think
the argument that we made for Edge there about that we need depth, and that I don't think we need that, there's no kind of desperate need for a starter there. I think you could take that argument and you could equally apply it exactly the same and the same rationale to the wide receiver room.
And left tackle.
See, that's a different one. We could have had that conversation 3 or 4 weeks ago, and it would have been slightly different to the current conversation, wouldn't it?
It would, but now with the Rashi Rice thing looming over us, it's like, you know, we're going to lose certainly some reps from him. We are, no doubt about it.
And that is a worry, but later.
Like, and you can't rely on Tony, can you, from an injury perspective? You know, he's not always available. And, you know, even when you've got to fit Tony, what do you get from him? You know, it's still, we don't know. That's unproven because we've not had that. Sky Moore he's been
shite.
Yeah, for want of a better word. Yeah, he's not been what we expected.
Does the Rashi Rice situation change the draft plan at all?
100%. I mean, change the draft plan's interesting because I think we would have, looking at what positions are available at 32, 64, all of this, I think we would have had in the plans already to take a wide receiver at 32 or 64. There was even some talk of trading up ahead of Buffalo. I think that was already the plans, but I think the Rashi Rice situation has cemented that as in the plans, because it's most likely going to be a 4 or 6 game ban, isn't it? I'd guess.
I think somewhere around 4 or 6, yeah.
I'd guess off the top of my head, I would guess something like that, which is actually a significant part of the season. And I know, you know, you could argue just make do with Hollywood Brown and survive those games, but you know, that I don't think that's the sensible option. I think it definitely warrants signing an early receiver now, and it does put a bit more pressure on that early receiver as well, because for those initial 4, 6 or whatever games, there's going to be pressure on them to perform, because Rashi Rice last year was our best receiver, and you know, you look at the other guys on the roster, and I know Chris, you were saying that you don't see it as an absolute need, but you look at the other guys on the roster, and there's a lot of there's not a single guy there that doesn't have a question mark above their name, because they were trusted at certain points last year and they did not provide. We've lost MVS. That's probably a bigger loss than what we realised, because we know he shows up in the playoffs. But in the regular season, it's another target that's not there. If you don't replace, you know, let's put Rashi Rice aside. If you don't replace MVS, you're talking Tony's got to be fit, or you're talking Justin Ross needs to be given a chance. Sky Moore's got to be fit. So it's so much pressure on the rookie that comes in, and I think for that reason alone, I'm going to say our first pick, I'm going to be careful saying how I word it, but our first pick will be a wide receiver.
An offensive member of the Twins staff.
Are we in any different situation to this time last year then? Because it kind of feels like we had this conversation last year where it's like, well, you know, we need a rookie to come in and to contribute fairly straight away because the wide receiver room's dog shit, basically. Is the wide receiver room any better than it is this time last year with Hollywood Brown instead of MVS?
I think I'm happier that we've got Hollywood Brown as somebody who I think can be relied upon and is a decent receiver. Whereas last year, I'd always had question marks over MVS. When we signed MVS, I wasn't sure about, because I knew his hands were a suspect. He'd always had drops in his career and kind of became a bit of a staple throughout the season. But yeah, he showed up in the playoffs. But I'm happier going into this season having Rice back after however long, Hollywood Brown, Travis Kelce's always going to, you know, kind of command a certain amount of snaps and targets. But again, he's another year old and you can't rely on him. And that's a worry that I've got as well, that if we have these targets have been taken away from Hardman, because he's gone, there's targets being taken away from MVS because he's gone, you kind of just then turn to, all right, we've got Travis Kelce, he'll take them, because he's another year older. And he, for me, visibly last year, he looked like he'd kind of lost a little bit. He put a bit more weight on, whether that's the content in the relationship with Taylor Swift, you know what I mean? Exactly. I think he looked like he was getting a little bit bigger and less, a little bit less athletic. I don't know.
I can tell you, the older you get, the harder it is to keep it off.
Exactly. That's it. So I think, but I do feel better having Hollywood Brown in there than saying going into the season, having MVS backing up Travis Kelce as a receiver, not necessarily obviously the wide receiver, but as a receiver and commanding targets. I feel happier having Brown there than I do having MVS there, knowing that you've still got a kind of a burner with a bit of size in Justin Watson. Yeah, he's, you know, he's not one of the best receivers in the NFL, but he can be solid. But again, another guy that was kind of blighted by drops a bit last year. So I do feel as though we're in a little bit of a better position, but it does make me think, and I'll stick to it, that we need somebody else that can come in, and not necessarily as much as Rice did last year, because towards the end of the season, arguably, Rice was wide receiver one.
It wasn't even an argument. Absolutely, yeah, it was.
I think, but need somebody that, at the start of the season, he kind of took quite a few snaps, which, again, it's kind of unheard of in an Andy Reid offense, you know, that the receivers generally have that notorious playbook that they've got to take an eternity to get through and learn, and that it always was that the first year, the rookie season, you're not really going to see much playing time, and it's your sophomore year that's where you're going to see a bit more of that target share. But I think that was kind of, it was almost forced upon the Chiefs last year, and I think it worked out. And hopefully they look at it and think, do you know what, these kids can come in and do a job for us. They are clever enough to learn the offense and are certain elements of it that we don't need to put everything on them, but enough to be effective. And I think we need somebody that can do the same kind of thing. So probably, again, like at least no later than a second round receiver. There's the argument of, you know, tackle receiver should be, for me, without doubt, the first two selections, if possible. But going back to that point, if you can't take a tackle outside of the top six tackles, I'd be inclined to go kind of developmental piece, maybe a bit later on, third round, something like that, second round, and go potentially 100%. Best player available at 32. And if that then is a receiver, or you've got an ability to be able, because the tackles, the six have gone so early, you've got an ability to jump the bills to take somebody like a Mitchell or a Thomas, you know, somebody like that, then you know, go for it. That's what I'd like to see. But I think the first two picks have got to be those two for me. Unless...
Phil, would you agree wide receiver and left tackle are picks one and two?
It's really funny, you know, because I'm not often in agreement with Chris, and I'm trying not to not agree with Chris.
We're very much like this, me and Phil. You know, it's kind of love-hate relationship, that kind of thing.
I'm trying my best not to agree with him, but what I will say, so it leads on to what I was trying to say a little bit earlier, is I think left tackle is our glaring need, but I actually don't like any of the left tackles at 32. You could argue somebody like a Jordan Morgan is worth the pick, but I think you can get better value out of a different skill position, like a wide receiver. And I've looked at the sort of left tackle options. And funnily enough, Neil, you've obviously got your board open in front of us. You've got one of my real sleeper guys on the board.
Can I just say this before you speak?
Yeah, because I think I've told you, but go on.
Is it Roger Rosengarten?
No, it's not actually. It's Javon Foster that you've got on the board.
Oh.
Purely because he's got such... He's known the position, which... There's a lot of guys in there sort of mid, so like Chris said, after the top sort of six tackles, a lot of those guys, like your Amagajis, have dabbled in different positions, or they've dabbled through injuries as well. So there's a lot of question mark guys, and that's why the only one I would take around round two, or potentially even round three, but probably not, is Patrick Paul. And pretty much my only logical reason outside of him being an absolute behemoth is that he has played a huge number of snaps over his 3-year period. So he knows that position as much as it's possible to know. And Javon Foster's the other player that I see in that framework. He's got a very similar build and physicality about him, and he knows the position inside out. And that is why I'm hesitant. So you've said, you know, first two picks, wide receiver, left tackle. If we went right wide receiver first pick and Patrick Paul wasn't available, I'd be hesitant to go left tackle at pick two, because the options there are all dice throws. None of them are sort of, yes, I want that guy.
Is it a case of you would quite like them in the building, but you don't want them on the field this year?
Yeah, because one of the guys I was really looking at was Kieran Amagaji. And then I really started to look into his injury this year, and he just didn't play a great deal. So the worry that I have over a player like him, and he would be a guy that would probably be there at 64, is that he's played 3 years in college. In 2021, he was a left guard. In 2022, he had a real full season at left tackle. And then last year, he was injured and missed pretty much two-thirds of the year. And then the other option I was sort of hesitant over at that sort of area was Kingsley Suamataya, before I ruin that name. But he's transferred, only last year did he transfer over from right tackle. So the reason that I'm looking at a Patrick Paul and a Javon Foster is purely because they know the position. I think both of them actually have played over Patrick Paul definitely played over 900 snaps a year for a 3-year period. That is, to me, you've cemented yourself as knowing that position. Because if we were talking about a wide receiver now in round two that actually played linebacker last year, played linebacker 2022 and then moved into a wide receiver, you'd be a lot more nervous than you would be with taking a pure wide receiver. And I know that's completely different positionals rather than a left tackle and a right tackle, but I don't think enough's being said about the guys that we're going to really have as options at round two tackle. I know, you know, like I said, that was the extreme, linebacker to wide receiver, but right tackle to left tackle, we know it's not easy because we signed Juwan Taylor to play left tackle and that did not work out. So we know it's not as easy as just going, yeah, play that side instead. I kind of agree with you, Chris, but at the same time, I don't like our left tackle options at 32. Jordan Morgan's maybe the one I'd get on board with.
Yeah, sorry, go on. You don't like...
No, I was just going to say, I don't like... I don't like the options outside of Jordan Morgan, which I think there's better positional places to take at 32. And I don't really like the options at 64 outside of Patrick Cull. Otherwise, I would just rather resign a veteran and take a Javon Foster in sort of round 5 or 6 as a depth piece. That's kind of where I am on it.
When you both talk about the 6 with tackles,
we're looking at Latham, you're missing.
Oh, Fashanu, Latham, Mims.
Oh no, you've got Latham there, sorry.
Fuerga, and who?
Troy Fotanu, you're missing. Troy Fotanu.
I have him listed as a guard here.
He's probably going to end up playing tackle, I think, in the NFL. But that's the other thing. Like, it's a projection. I mean, like, some people say they can play a guard. Some people say they'll be more of a left tackle. Again, Jordan Morgan, what Phil was saying, he's another one who it's a dice roll. Do the organization believe he can play tackle, or like a lot of kind of draft analysts are projecting that he's probably going to project more so as a guard in the NFL. But you know, it doesn't mean he can't play a tackle. You know, you can draft him and try him as a left tackle. If it doesn't work, kick him inside. You know, for the team that wants him, if you've got a need at both positions. But just to add to that, I mean, like Patrick Paul and Juwan Foster both played like at least 1,500 snaps at left tackle. So, you know, they've got so much experience there. I'm the same that if you can't get your guy, and I'm not talking necessarily at 32 taking a tackle. I'm saying if you can't go and move up to take one of the top 6, and I include Fortano in that, if you can't move up to take one of those 6 to play left or right tackle, and move, you know, if you take a right tackle, move Juwan Taylor over to the left, see how that goes. I'm not sure the organisation want to do it, but they did bring him in as a left tackle initially, said he would play there.
Paid him left tackle money.
Yes, they did. And I think the fact that Donovan Smith kind of became available, I think it was more about that than the inability of Taylor to play left tackle. Thinking maybe it would give him time to kind of just find, like, learn the nuances more of playing left tackle throughout the year and in training. And I've not heard much about him having done that, but I don't know. He might have done.
Where are you on Wanya Morris, Chris? Because he was, if I remember, your hot take for the season was Morris would be kind of starting by week 8. And he played spurts.
He did. And like, I think
he was starting by week 8 through injury.
It was fits and starts. He kind of like, he showed flashes of what he could do. But there was also quite a few occasions where he was kind of beaten badly, you know.
So are we giving up on him already?
No, hell no, absolutely not.
Because we're looking at potentially a first round left tackle here, and we only drafted him in the third last year.
Yep.
But then are we just looking at the left tackle, the 6 guys, and going, they're better than Wanya Morris?
I think in terms of left and right, yeah. I mean, it's not just one position for me. Sorry, Phil. It's not just one position for me. I mean, it's that you've got, you know, you're paying big money to Juwan Taylor. I mean, for me, I've said that you could potentially move him to the left, and I think that's not off the table. Like Wanya Morris he originally kind of started off as a right tackle, a bit like Tyler Guyton did, you know. So I think that it's not beyond the realms of possibility that those two kind of switch and that they don't bring back Donovan Smith. They play Taylor on the left, Morris on the right, and they actually draft somebody left or right tackle, whoever they like the most and think has got the most potential at whichever position, and maybe bring them in, not necessarily at that 32 point, but later on, as Phil said, down the board as a depth piece. But I don't know. It's so hard to second guess what they could do with it. But I just think if you don't get, or you're not in a position to move up to take one of those top 6, I think you then can't go into the season starting one of those, anybody else that you might take, and you're then either relying on Smith coming back, or you're playing Morris at left tackle and Taylor at right tackle, or you're switching them and playing them the other way around. I'm absolutely not giving up on Wanya Morris. I think he's got a bright future. I'm out on Lucas Niang now, but he's still hanging around in the background.
Is availability.
Absolutely, and he's never. He's still hanging around. So you never know. I mean, you know, pigs might fly, and he might come out as this kind of absolute baller and walk into the team and be all pro. But like I said, pigs might fly as well.
Phil. Go say something.
No, I was just going to mention Wanya Morris. I think. Oh. Just looking at your list, actually, I think it's Tyler Guyton that you're missing, and he's a right tackle. But but we're saying top 6. I think there's probably about 7 or 8 in those positions. I think Wanya Morris, I'm not ready to give up on him, but I also, I think he had his moments, exactly what Chris said, where he was really, really good at the left tackle position. And then when he sort of came across the elite defenders, you know, they make anyone look silly. But, I mean, they did make him look silly. And they made him look silly a lot of the time by getting deep on the outside. And it's just got me thinking in my head, you know, we've lost Allegretti. We should really draft a guard. But I wouldn't mind seeing Wanyama-Morris drop into one of those guard roles as well. So I don't think he's got that starter ability at a guard, but I definitely think he's got that sort of Allegretti can step in and do a very solid job.
I think player strength, you can. Yeah. I mean, like, as long as you're a big body, strong guy, you should be able to hold your own at a guard. So.
And I think he definitely can, because that was his strength last year. When he looked good, it was because he was just stopping people. And the times he looked poor was when he was just getting beat by footwork. He was just getting beat on the outside or a quick jump inside. And obviously guard is just a lot more about just being an absolute brick wall, which I think he's very good at.
I think he did better with power edges than he did with speed rushes. I think the speed rushes caused him problems, but that then at times they do that to people. I mean, the bigger you are as well, the kind of the harder it is to deal with the people who've got that elite bend and, you know, that kind of ankle flexion. It's hard to be able to deal with those guys. But definitely I'm not giving up on him nowhere. He's got potential.
Is it just a case then of drafting an old lineman and getting the best five out there and figuring it out? You know, kind of the age-old adage is you put your best five out there and you figure out the positions as you go along.
Quite possibly.
If you're talking about guard, like, you're not playing Wanyama-Morris at guard instead of Tooney, and you're probably not playing him instead of Trey Smith.
Injury to one of them, maybe you might think about doing it.
Yeah. Exactly. I think I always try and think of that future piece as well. You know, I think if you'd have asked anyone 2 years ago, Trey Smith was an absolute, we will re-sign him. But last year raised a slight question.
You look at the money that guards went for.
Exactly.
This year.
And I just think Tooney's showing his age a little bit more last year. He did pick up some injuries. Trey Smith is your big question mark. Will he sort of survive next year at guard as well? And I think that's a great position for Wanyama-Morris to really, you know, step into that Allegretti role. And we'll need that with Tooney showing a little bit of age as well. But long term, you know, we never know. That might be his forte there. And that's why I think we look at, like, get your best five out there. I think we definitely need a number. We need one draftee in that position area of just offensive line. But it wouldn't surprise me as well if we took a left tackle and a guard. And that's purely because even if we were to re-sign, say, a Donovan Smith, it's going to be a one-year deal.
Yeah.
And then we'll be having this exact same conversation next year. So I think if we can, while we've got the draft capital to afford to fix future issues as well, I think we definitely need to be looking at that. And it's no disrespect to Wanyama-Morris. I think it's just looking towards the future more than anything.
I mean, I think, to be quite honest, there's very quickly, Neil, I'll just add to that as well, that if you do bring Donovan Smith back on a one-year deal, like Phil said, and it will be a one-year deal, it won't be anything longer than that. This tackle class is as good as I've seen for years. And it's, from what I know from next year's, I don't know a great deal of it from next year's yet, but it's not as deep and as good as this from what I've seen of it. This is kind of an outlier. It's one of the strongest positions in the draft. If you're in a position now to take somebody, even if you develop them for a year and do bring back Donovan Smith, you then should be happy with who you brought in for 2025 season. I think you've got to do it this year. You have to do it because it's such a good class.
So, Phil, is there any one of those big six, inverted commas, that you would trade up for? And if so, how far up would you be willing to go?
I think that's the real question, isn't it? Because you would probably trade up for the majority of them. But I think they are all too high for me. I think the only one that I think could fall to a reasonable mark, but I wouldn't be comfortable trading up for him, as Amarius Mims. And I think the main reason is one, he's a right tackle, so it brings up that whole debate: can Juwan Taylor play left tackle, or can Mims step into that left tackle? But I also think Chris will probably know this more than me, but I don't think he played a great amount of snaps. I think he's been around for a couple of years, but he's pretty much jumped onto the scene. I want to say he's not played more than sort of 300 or 400 snaps a year. And he's played all at right tackle.
Under no illusion whatsoever that the guy's athletic enough to play a left tackle, but he just again, his traits that he's so good that if he was a player who's able to play, say, he played 900 snaps for the last couple of years, he'll go in top five. But he hasn't, yeah. and that's the yeah. problem. So, like, he's got everything you need, but it's a massive dice roll because he's never been available.
Yeah, but Mintz is the one who has the. He's a physical unit. Like, he is a behemoth.
Oh, God, yeah. And, yeah. and 340 pounds.
Although he hasn't played as much, you don't get guys that size that can move like he moves. Hell so, no. You're absolutely right, Phil. 121 snaps in 2021, 383 in 2022, and 297 in 2023.
Yeah.
I just think he's all at right tackle.
Exactly, and I have. He's probably the only one you would deem as affordable. He'll probably go somewhere between that 22 and 28 mark. So he's probably the only one. If we were to trade higher than 22, let's say we were to trade the one that's sort of coming to mind a little bit is Fashanu, because at first he was a top 10 pick, and now for some reason I don't think it's so much that he's slipping. I think it's that guys are coming out the woodwork, because like we were discussing off Brian Thomas was a round two guy at one point in February, and now he's receiver four. So I don't think he's slipping. I think guys are just pulling ahead. So if let's say Fashanu dropped to 17, 18, and we were to trade off for somebody like that, I would absolutely be on board with that. But I just think outside of maybe even just Fashanu, there's no one that I would be in love with enough that we give up other picks to go there, because you know we've got seven picks and I think we've got some future needs that need looking at as well. I would like to use all of those picks unless it's for a very clever reason, sort of, you know, let's go ahead of Buffalo to take Adonai Mitchell, something like that really makes sense, or you know let's go to 18 to 20 to take Fashion or something like that. But yeah, there's out of those top tackle guys, I think a lot of them are more right tackle and left tackle, and it just raises a whole new question with Juwan Taylor, and I just can't be bothered dealing with that all off season. And we know how Juwan Taylor was targeted by the league, and I don't see that being any different next year. So let's not have that risk at left tackle. Let's just keep him at right tackle if we can. Yeah,
just to talk about the draft board a little here, then. So I will share this on socials, and the three of us, I think we can all see this because I'm sharing my screen. So hopefully this is working.
Yes,
yeah. So it's. I have players broken down by rounds and by positions. So the five tackles I've got in the first round are Alt, Fashanu, Latham, Mims and Fuaga. And then I have it color-coded, split into top of the round, middle of the round, bottom of the round. And it's not, and I'm saying that is where they're going to go. That's where I would be comfortable taking them. So the conversation we have about like Mims there, for example, I have him in the 21 to 32 range. I'm not saying he's going to go 21 to 32, but if he comes available in that range, then you're going, well, maybe you'd think about trading up for him. So Alton Fashanu, I have top 10. And if they drop out of that top 10, are they good enough that you'd want to try and get up to 15 for Fashanu? Like if he dropped that far?
I would for Alt.
But he's going to Tennessee at 7. That's pretty much locked on.
Nailed. You can put your mortgage on that for me, I think.
Yeah,
like I'm a gambler, but that's a odds on certainty, I think.
Yeah, it's no value.
So, like, I've got. I think the problem we have here, as you've just kind of alluded to, is that the three guys I've got in the 21 to 32 range are Latham, Mims, and Fuaga are all right tackles.
Yeah. And there's questions really... about Fuaga sometimes, not necessarily whether he could play tackle, but he would be an absolutely elite guard. And it's kind of, you know, is there somebody going to take him and actually do that with him and get yourself almost like a Pro Bowl guard, or do they take him at right tackle? You know, a very good right tackle. So it's just one of those things, isn't it? That what would you do? I mean, for Mims, would I want to kind of move up to something like 21 for Mims? Well, I don't think so, with the question marks that I've got. It would cost too much.
Yeah, I definitely don't think so. And do you know a guy I would not go too high for, but if we'd have to go to say 26 around there, if he was available, Graham Barton, because you've even got him listed as a guard. He played left tackle. There's a lot of hype of him as a guard, and I even seen some rumors today that a couple of teams would even look at drafting him as a center. Now that is a guy that would make sense to have and sort of fill that need of, you've got that left tackle if you need him. You've also got that Allegretti if you need him. He just seems like an all-purpose guy. And if we're talking that we just want at least a body in that offensive line, well, you don't get a better body than that.
I don't think you can afford to take that kind of thing.
He's a perfect example of how I have the draft board working, because I have him late in the second round and as a guard, because I don't want to take a guard in the first round. Now, if he is by some chance still there late in the second, fuck yeah, absolutely. I'm all in on that. Let's have him. But I don't necessarily see, he's not going to make it out the first round, I don't think. But if he does make it down that far, I'm open to that.
Interesting, he was recruited as a center initially when he came out of high school. He was recruited as a center prospect, and then ended up playing again over 1,000 snaps at left tackle. But there's just his grip strength and everything. I mean, he's just superb. He's a strong guy. His footwork's brilliant. He athletically, and the way that he moves, he could play left tackle. The only problem that they've got is just that he's a bit undersized in terms of the length, you know. And I don't know whether, I mean, scouts are always going to say that, you know, I've got kind of questions about the length. Can he play a left tackle? Well, he's done it well enough at Duke, and I know it's a step up in class, massively a step up in class, but you know, it depends how much you like him and how much the organization believe he can play a left tackle. I mean, if you believe it'll translate to the NFL, then, you know, by all means, I love the guy. I think, you know, he's very high on my board, but definitely more so as an interior offensive lineman than a tackle. I think if you were to project him as a tackle for me, he wouldn't be as high. But I wouldn't say he can't play a tackle. I've got him 17 on my board.
This conversation is kind of leading me to think I don't want to go tackle in the first round, because the guys 100%. Who are like, the guys who are
sorry, I was just going to say.
Yeah, go on.
No, I didn't mean to the last part. It's that delay. I literally was going to say that's exactly what my next comment was going to be. That I was almost adamant, I said at the start, that I didn't want to go left tackle first round. And now this conversation and how we're talking about players around it is just cemented that for me.
100%.
Definitely. Wide receiver. But yeah, definitely. I don't see that as well. Pick a 32.
For me, unless you can take Joe Alt, I'm not.
A 32,
which you can't.
Nice.
Which you would. No, move up. Which there's no way he's going to fall.
No. Yeah.
Anywhere near enough for us to even at like 15, he's not even going to fall to 15 where you could say it's feasible enough. It's not going to happen. So
15 would cost you a first, second, and a third.
Exactly, and I'd be out on that. He's the only one. Latham and Mims, if they were there at 32. Or even at, say, 28, I might be inclined to say, as a right tackle, yeah, maybe let's move up for them. But it's not realistically going to happen, is it? I think we are where we are. And I think it's a case of it's best player available and best player that fits your need at 32, or a small move up. And I think that then is just going to end up falling to wide receiver, given what we've said about the Rashee Rice situation and the need to, you know, replace those snaps for 4 to 6 games, which, you know, let's not forget, it's kind of a, you know, talking a third of the season.
So I've got on the board here 8 wide receivers that I would consider in the first round. Before we go to those, is there anyone else? So the other guys we've got are tight end Brock Bowers, who's probably gone 10 to 15 range.
We wish.
Johnny Newton and Byron Murphy, 2 defensive tackles. I would love Byron Murphy. Like, if Byron Murphy was there, I would run up and I would fuck off the wide receivers. And I would have Murphy in the
either
heartbeat.
Of them. Either I would.
Laiti Latu and Jared Verse Edges, both probably gone by the time we're picking. And then I've got 4 corners. And even now, I'm not sure I even want these 4 corners there. But Terry and Arnold and Quinion Mitchell in the middle of the first. And Lassiter and Tulane McKinstry at the back end of the first. Is there anybody out of them who you would consider over a wide receiver?
No.
If I'm being right, so if I'm picking a 32, and we're not going to talk about trade ups because it just adds a whole new realm of conversation. I think sensibly, you know, let's go through by position. Edge, you've got Latu and Verse, they're gone. They're 100% gone. If Darius Robinson, you've got him as a second round guy. If Darius Robinson is there at 32, he's my first choice because I just think the play you get in a 32 is brilliant. I would take him over any wide receiver. Except, you know, obviously you're a Dunze neighbor. They're all gone. Ryan Thomas gone. So Darius Robinson is the guy. If you were to ask me to nail on a guy now that I absolutely want, it's probably Darius Robinson. But I think the Lions are going to take him because he partners up with Aiden Hutchinson's style of play so well that I just can't see him getting past the Lions. Unless I'd even trade up slightly for him. But that's really the only one because you've got your corners. I have Nate Wiggins slightly higher as well, but outside of Arnold, Mitchell and Wiggins, I don't want either of the others. And again, Byron Murphy, yes, yeah, absolutely. I'd probably have Byron Murphy slightly above Darius Robinson. I just don't realistically believe he's going to be there. So it's similar to it's funny enough actually because looking at your draft board, everybody else that you've got that you want in round one is pretty much gonna be way gone. So, and I think it's that process of elimination that I would go wide receiver. That's why I'm so homed in on wide receiver because Byron Murphy, Darius Robinson would be brilliant, but they're just probably not going to be there. So that's why I'm leaning on wide receiver.
Okay. So go on, Chris. Go on.
I feel different. I feel like Darius Robinson will be there at 32, but.
I'd snap him off if he was. I don't know if it's couple of mock drafts that I've been reading, but everybody that seems to be reading seems to somewhat agree with me that I just don't see him getting past the Lions.
He's a great player, really. He's a great player.
Is he one of these tweeners where you can play him a bit at tackle, you can play him a bit at edge?
Yeah. But I would say it more so
a versatile defensive line weapon, if you like.
Yeah, your 3-tech to 5-tech kind of in an even front or in an odd front, you could probably play him as that kind of just shade inside the tackle, like the kind of 4-eye, that kind of thing. But he's one of those guys that he's got that versatility, a bit like a Carl Aftis, a bit like an Amenihu. A bit of a tweener, not a true kind of edge setter as such. But I think he's a great player. I think I've just got a feeling that he will be there at 32. I'm not sure, but for me, there's nobody on there necessarily. I would say that depending on which receivers are there, the only person, and I've seen him fall this far now, that will potentially say I would take over a wide receiver is Kule McKinstry. Opposite side of Trent McDuffie, but. If, for some reason, Mitchell's there, A.D. Mitchell, I ain't taking Kule McKinstry over A.D. Mitchell.
So, you are a big
A.D. Mitchell.
Which leads us on to the wide receivers. So we have 8 listed here, right? So I have Marvin Harrison in the 1 to 10 range. He's going at number 4 to Arizona, if they have any sense.
We've got no chance, basically.
Neighbours and Adunze. Like I have in the 11 to 20 range, just in case something happens, but they're probably going
top 10.
No later than 9, I would say, yeah.
Neighbours is going 5, and Odunze is going 9.
Yeah. And then in no particular order, I've got Ladd McConkey, shout out to Callum, who's a big Ladd McConkey fan. Troy Franklin, Brian Thomas, Xavier Worthy, and A.D. Mitchell. Now, Brian Thomas is likely going 15 to 20 or thereabout. I don't think he makes it past the Steelers. I don't think he makes it past the Steelers, who are picking at 20-ish.
Yeah, latest is Buffalo, like absolute latest.
Worst case scenario for him, yeah. A.D. Mitchell is probably going not long after him.
Ravens, probably, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like that 25 to kind of 29, 30 range, possibly Bills as well, depending on what happens with Brian Thomas.
My best guess is that at 32, there is a reasonable chance that McConkey, Franklin, and Worthy are all available. So my question, let's go Phil. My question is, do you trade up for Mitchell or Thomas, or do you sit at 32 and hope that McConkey, Franklin, or Worthy are there?
So, get it out of the way that my draft crush from the very start was Troy Franklin.
And I will add to that that Troy Franklin was the first name that I put on this draft board.
Literally, he was my draft crush from the beginning. Would I trade up for Brian Thomas? Yes, because he's different to what we've got now in that he is a big body, he is heavy, he is fast, he is different to what we've got now and different to what the majority of those guys are. I mean, you even look at the guys into the second round there, and he's quite different. To be that size and that athletic, he's different. Would I trade up for Brian Thomas? Yes. Would I trade up for Adonai Mitchell? No, but if he's there at 32, he would be my guy.
How far up would you trade for Brian Thomas? Or how far would you feel comfortable with that?
I think we have a need for all of our picks. We've discussed that we don't need positions, but I think we need that depth, especially since you look at some of the names that are coming up contract-wise next year. We've got, you know, Trey Smith, Creed Humphrey, Nick Bolton. We've got some players that potentially we need to start looking at guys this year to sort of use those picks and really sort of fill out the roster. So I think we need the picks. I'm not willing to go. I will go Buffalo at 28. I would go 27 for Brian Thomas. And any earlier than 27, it's just not worth it for me because we're going to have to give up so much to get him. So I would go 27 for Brian Thomas.
27 and give up next year's third that we got.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't forget there's next year's picks to potentially work with as well as, you know, sometimes you see people giving up the following year's picks, which is, it's stupid.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If that's, honestly, a lot of the mocks that I've been looking at, like I've been trying to do, I've been using that next year's third. If that's the option, if we can filter that into something, then great. But I think if you're going to a team at sort of 27 range, I think you're gonna have to give up, you know, our 32, probably a fourth or a fifth, and next year's third. And it's the number of picks I'm looking at. I really want to pick probably come out with six players minimum. So yeah, I'm probably not gonna go higher than 27 for Brian Thomas. AD Mitchell, really, really like him, but I like him at 32. I won't trade up for him. I really like him at 32. But yeah, Brian Thomas is the only guy that I'm trading up for.
I think
Chris, go.
I'd be inclined to kind of agree but kind of disagree slightly in that I would Brian Thomas I would trade up if I could with the Cowboys 24. Didn't work last year, but if it does, then I think I'm sure when I looked at the draft trade value chart that 32 to 24 I think is basically a third round pick, and that kind of if they accepted next year's third from Tennessee, great. Not necessarily sure they would, but I'd trade up to 24 for him. The furthest I would trade up for AD Mitchell, as much as I love him, would be probably 27 to get ahead of the Bills, but that's it. I wouldn't move up further for. I would move up further for Brian Thomas than I would for Mitchell, but it would be. I would move a small amount for Mitchell.
So is there not enough of a discernible difference between, like, Mitchell / Thomas and McConkey, Franklin, Worthy? Well, actually, a slightly different question before I ask that one. Is there any out of McConkey, Franklin, or Worthy that you wouldn't pick?
Worthy. I think, in fact, no, I don't want to say his name again, because if I say his name a third time, I actually think it might blow him over.
£65, he's not
let me be
blown through Arrowhead.
Let me be right. If we picked Xavier Worthy at 64, I would be thumbs up. I would be more than happy. That's great. But the fact that he's jumped into the first round purely based off his 40 time. You look at the guys who are inside that top 10 40 times with him. You're talking the likes of John Ross, who couldn't even break into our roster. Was it this year or the year before? I don't even remember when it was. He was that irrelevant on the practice squad. So just because he's fast does not, spoiler alert guys, just because a guy is fast does not mean he is anything else other than that. And I think but if Wavy comes into the league, he is absolutely going to need to put on 15, 20 pounds minimum, which then takes that speed slightly down. Not much, but slightly down. Yeah, He does have good hands. He was used a lot at Texas as well, which, you know, it gives you a bit of hope because a lot of the speeds, the guys, they're used once or twice a game, and he caught a lot of football. So I would be happy with him as a player. I really, really do not want him at 32 or... God forbid, I saw a mock draft where we traded up to 19 for him. Like,
that's ridiculous.
Give me him in the second round, or give me him in the third round, or well, whatever. But I would like him on the team. I just absolutely do not want him at 32. He is the one I do not want.
75 receptions from 119 targets for 1,014 yards and 5 touchdowns last season.
He's had issues with drops as well.
If you watch a lot of his tape, if you watch a lot of Wavy's tape, he's catching the ball and he's already gone from players. Now, the standard of defender in the NFL, he's not going to get that luxury. He's going to catch that ball and be yeeted 60 yards into the air by any linebacker, probably by any corner in the NFL. So I just think he's got to tweak his game slightly. He's got to put on a little bit more muscle, and he's already shown he can get the yards. Fair enough, he's got a few drops, but I think he's going to be a very good receiver once he puts on 20 pounds. But he can't come into the league in the shape he is now. So that 40 time is irrelevant to me.
I left Zay Flowers off last year's board because he was too light, and I was then watched him play in the league, and if guys can't get near him, it doesn't matter what he weighs.
Do you know what the perfect example of that player. Is? Tank Dell. Tank Dell's the perfect example of that. You can't touch him. You cannot get anywhere near him.
I think Zay Flowers is a different player because Zay Flowers is very route based. So he's shifty. He's quicker than fast. He'll run around. Exactly. He'll run a route that'll mesmerize somebody. He'll catch the ball and he'll be tackled 2 yards later. Wavy is expected to catch the ball 10 yards downfield and run another 10 yards. Yeah. And that is the bit that will. Wavy will be tired inside his first game, I can tell. But. I'll let Chris get his opinion in, and then I've prepared for this, Chris. I want to tell you who my pick of 32 is, and I've prepared for this. I'm gonna talk you round to it, Chris.
Okay. So you bamboozled me with words there now. So what was the question? What did you want me to? Who do we take at 32? So would I take any of those at 32? Out of McConkie, Franklin.
I think the question
was Franklin or Worthy.
Out of those three, which one do you not want to 32?
I wouldn't take any of the three at 32, personally. Brilliant. Not because I don't like them, necessarily. Well, one of them I'm not as high on, but you know that. The other two, I think, you know, good players. Again, going back to the point you made about Worthy, that stands. So, McConkie and Franklin, you know, they just did this... kind of similar players to what we've got. Certainly McConkie. I've made no secret about the fact that I want a kind of a big bodied X, you know, and that's not McConkie. It ain't Worthy. And I'd argue it ain't Troy Franklin either. I would be unhappy about playing Troy Franklin at X. So, I mean, personally at 32, if they were there, McConkie, Franklin, Worthy, and Coleman was there, I'd take Kieran Coleman over them. Now,
if the three of them were there and Kool-Aid McKinstry was still there, who would you take? Would you take McKinstry?
Oh, no. No.
I'd probably
For those that can't see this, Phil's shaking his head.
No, I'd probably still take Kieran Coleman, to be honest, because, I mean, I think he got a bit of stick because of the fact that his 40 time wasn't what people were expecting. But again, you go back to the opposite of that, that Worthy, you know, he wasn't in a first round conversation on anybody's board, really. Maybe he's fringe if you're lucky, until he ran a 4-2-1. I know all of a sudden it's like, oh, hang on a second, this guy's a first rounder. Well, if he wasn't a first rounder before he ran a 4-2-1, you can't say he's a first rounder now just because he ran that kind of speed. Again, look at John Ross. As an example, on the flip side, Keon Coleman, people were really high on him. All of a sudden he runs like a 4.60 or something like that. And they say, oh, no, that's not pretty good. He's dropped for me. But if you look at the gauntlet drill in the combine, the only receiver that actually made 20 miles an hour play speed was Keon Coleman, and he was absolutely straight as a die down that line. He was brilliant. He was fantastic, and I've loved what I've seen of him this season. So absolutely, I'd take Coleman over those three guys because he fits that prototypical ex-receiver mold that I want us to bring in, because we don't have that. We've got an abundance of slot and Z receivers. You know, we don't have that kind of big body reliable X, and that is the kind of guy I want, somebody that would bully defensive backs. And he's got great hands. He's got fantastic kind of contested catch rate. He's shiftier than you think. He can create separation, not as much as some of the other receivers, but he is quite off the line of scrimmage. He can create separation quite easily. So I'd love to take Keon Coleman over those guys at 32, and definitely over Cooley McKinstry. Yeah.
So I have Coleman in the middle of the second on here. Alongside Jim.
I'll actually agree with Chris on Coleman. Coleman has gotten disrespect for his 40 time, and if you watch his footage, he was never the fast guy. He's never relied on being a fast guy. He's relied on his hands and his route. Not even so much his route running, just so much his ability to get the catch in. And he's a player that I have one guy above him, obviously, you know, that's going to be Chris. But if we came away with Keon Coleman 32, I'm more than happy.
Yeah.
So, Phil, talk us into your man.
I prepped for this. So, I went through a stage. So, Troy Franklin, my draft crush. I went through a stage of accepting that he wasn't the right fit because we already have Rashee Rice. And Troy Franklin is a very, very similar player to Rashee Rice. And I accepted for about a month that we weren't going to go. And then Rice is obviously... Yeah, Rice is Rice. So there's question marks over how many games he's going to miss, if not the entire season. So I really want Chris to be here for this. So I'm going to just delay it a second. And yeah, so Chris has just ran away by the set, guys. So I think he's gone to mentally prepare for what I'm about to give him. So just to throw some more names out there before we get into the Troy Franklin discussion. If there's a lot of guys like that, I'm seeing Xavier Leggett sort of creep into the first round. Again, he's not in my top sort of few picks, but depending on how the draft goes and if the wide receivers we've spoken about so far are pretty much all gone, and then if at 32 you were to offer me Xavier Wavy or Xavier Leggett, I would probably go Leggett. He's a very similar player to Adonai Mitchell. He's just a couple of years older, and similar to what Chris sort of alluded on a little bit earlier, he's kind of jumped on the scene this year. So last couple of years,
Leggett, we have back end.
I can't believe that he had less than 200 yards. You know what? I am really high on him as a player from what I've seen this year. His catch rate and his catchability, to make up a word, is fantastic. But one of the things I genuinely didn't know, and I'm massively surprised by, is that the 2 years prior to this, he had less than 200 yards. That is mental to me, especially with his age, because he's 23. He's very, very similar to Adonai Mitchell, who's 21, but he's 23, and you're telling me he's had one good year. That does raise a lot of question marks, and I was quite high on Leggett, and now I'm a little bit nervous about him. So, side story, because we now got Chris back. Chris, I really wanted to talk you around with Troy Franklin, so a bit of a tangent. So, Troy Franklin at 32, very similar to Rashee Rice. So I'd convinced myself that we weren't going to get him. We didn't have a need for him. He's not going to fit the team. And then I started having another thought over the last couple of weeks. And Andy Reid, as we've mentioned, doesn't really play as rookie receivers unless he's forced into it. And I think he will be this year as well. But one of the things that Andy Reid does is he doesn't stick to, you're telling me you want an X, you want Adonai Mitchell at an X. That's not Andy Reid. Andy Reid doesn't stick a guy in a position and leave him there. He'll play Rashee Rice on the wide. He'll play Rashee Rice in the middle. He'll play him wherever he needs to be. Yep. And that is Troy Franklin all over. Because if you look at him, I'm going to compare him to a player that you're going to just raise your eyebrows at. If you compare Troy Franklin with Brian Thomas, he's got more yards after the catch than Brian Thomas. He's got double the catches in the slot that Thomas has. He's got more missed tackles from defenders. He's got actually the same contested catch rate. And I know you're going to love this one because I know that you hate receivers that have got quite a large amount of drops. And obviously, Troy Franklin had 9 last year. But Andy Reid has a bit of a habit of picking players with a lot of drops, because if you look at Rashi Rice's college year, his final college year, the one worry that everybody had about Rashi Rice was that he had a lot of drops. And I know that's somewhat translated into the league, but even with those drops last year, he still came out as our wide receiver one, and we were all really high on him coming into this year. So that the drops don't worry me, because as long as you can control the drops, and it's not every player dropping like it was last year, you can control, you can kind of get by with it, because the rest of the team is just that good. So if you've got Hollywood Brown, who's not dropping the ball, and you've got Rashi Rice, who's worked on his drops, you can afford for one guy to have a few drops. The other thing, and I know this is going to be the question that's burning in your mouth, I've compared him to Brian Thomas, but the defenses that Brian Thomas played were a lot higher quality than the defenses Franklin played at Oregon.
12, yeah.
But that's never stopped Andy Reid before either, because Rashi Rice came from SMU. And if you want to go further back, Tyreek Hill came from West Alabama. And look at how both of those players have translated into the league. I mean, even Rashi Rice, his last year was incredible. You look at the numbers that Troy Franklin has put up when he's got the ball in his hand. He is comparable. Whether you want to talk semantics about who he was playing or whatever, he is comparable with the likes of Brian Thomas, who was a player that we're both very high on. And I just think you look past the yards he put up, the touchdowns he put up, the records that he broke at Oregon. It's not like it's a small school. It's a huge school come in and absolutely broke the records. And if we really want to nitpick players, he had Bo Nix thrown to him, whereas he didn't have Jaden Daniels thrown to him. We can all agree he's going to be a top five pick. Bo Nix is probably a mid-second round guy. So I just think...
I was going to spot your argument there, actually.
No, I was just going to say, you throw everything into a cauldron and it actually does fit what I could see. And well, it's not so much Andy Reid as it is more Brett Veach, but they're going to discuss. That is the type of player I can see the Chiefs picking, because he can play in multiple positions across that receiving area. He's shown that he's got all of the talent available. He might have a few drops, but that never stopped us before. He just fits the mold for me. More than anybody else.
I get that. I mean, it's not so much the Franklin kind of thing it's not the person necessarily as such that I don't like. Well, all right. It was the combine thing that kind of did it for me. It was almost as though that his on-field drills just looked disrespectful to the combine. And it just didn't. It was as though he wasn't taking it seriously. And I think he kind of maybe he's got caught up a little bit. Maybe he's in his own hype and knows he's good. He is good. He is good. And it didn't seem as though that focus was there. And I mean, that's not something that's going to be a long-term concern. I mean, it's something that I'm sure Andy Reid would turn around and say, look, if you ain't focused, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, you know, then you ain't going to play, simple as that. But that focus and that lack of focus through the combine kind of, it made me think about the kind of drops that he's had as well. And it's that a lot of them weren't necessarily that was inaccuracy with Bo Nix. It was the focus drops. He was looking downfield before he'd actually caught the ball. And it was kind of like, you watch the ball in your hands, then you turn and go. But I mean, a lot of the time, I can't argue with the fact that the yards after the catch were, you know, superb. And, you know, he's a big body guy he's in terms of his height, but his weight for me is a concern. He's like, you're talking 180 odd pounds. It's, you know, he's a guy who, if you get played against press man, he's just going to get absolutely bullied by defensive backs who are good in press. I think that's the thing that concerns me a lot. And yes, you can move him around the field. And I'm not saying that you wouldn't do that. So I do want a big-bodied X, not because of the fact that they're not going to get moved into like playing the big slot role or something like that, but because of the fact that you've got that big-bodied bruiser that we don't have right now. It's something different to what we don't have. Franklin, we do kind of have that a bit. All right, not as tall, but we've got that in, like you said, Rashi Rice, very similar kind of players. So it's not that I don't necessarily like Franklin is the person. I think as a player, he will be effective in the NFL. He creates separation. He's a good route runner. I really enjoyed watching him this year. And I just think there was a few things that just, I was concerned about his level of focus that's cropped up a few times. And the drops, I just don't want to see any more drops. And I was kind of looking at what receivers have actually not got less than a 10% drop rate, or what receivers got less than a 5% drop rate. And kind of Troy Franklin was well out of that kind of range of what I liked and what I wanted to see. But, you know, if we took him at 32, yes, I'd maybe prefer somebody else over that, but would I be disappointed? No, I wouldn't be disappointed with that. I certainly wouldn't be moving up for him. And I would say that if Franklin was there along with Mitchell and Coleman, I'd rather we took Mitchell or Coleman before him. But if they weren't there for some reason, I'd be happy with kind of Franklin being that consolation prize. So, you know, made a good argument for him, and I can't, you know, I can't disagree with most of what you said.
I was listening to The Athletic last week, I think it was, and they did the wide receivers preview.
Yeah.
And they described Troy Franklin as a diet Brian Thomas.
Diet Brian, there
you go. Essentially, they were saying if you want to get like 85 to 90% of Brian Thomas late in the first round as opposed to pick 15 to 20,
yeah,
then you're probably getting good value. Is that fair, Phil?
Oh, 100%. I also don't think he'll play in the league in less than 195, because we see a lot of guys, and I'm not going to compare him to him in terms of the ability and the career he's going to have, but that's player in this year's draft. Justin Jefferson came into the league quite slight as well, and pretty much immediately within his first season put on probably 10 pounds, 15 pounds, kept his speed. Obviously, he's kept his ability and his height, because you're not going to lose those. And that's in my mind how I see Franklin going. He's going to come into the league. He's going to put on probably 5 to 10 pounds and bulk out slightly, and probably come into place. And that's why I sort of leaned off him. And it's purely because he to me he's Rashi Rice. That's the player. Yeah. Rashi had issues with the drops and that sort of stuff. They are a very similar player, and that was the only reason that I was sort of I had shied away from Troy Franklin. But I think he just fits, even as you were talking about his issues then, they were all just they just screamed Chiefs pick to me. We love to pick a guy that's not the finished product. We don't like picking the finished product.
Well, I think, to be honest, at 32, and where we pick at 32, 30, 31, 32, you don't really get that luxury of picking finished products very often. You know, they go.
I will agree that I would take Adonai Mitchell's the guy I would take over him, purely because he's something different to what we've already got. But in my head, and sort of what I'm seeing at the moment, I expect at the very latest Adonai Mitchell will go to the Ravens at 30 if we don't trade up or whatever. So in my head, you're Brian Thomas and you're Adonai Mitchell are gone. If we came out with, if Keon Coleman and Troy Franklin were both there, we came away with Keon Coleman, more than happy with it. Just everything about Troy Franklin to me screams Chiefs pick. And we do like to move guys in different sort of positions. And you know what, maybe it's not the end of the world that he's very similar to Rashi Rice, because Rashi Rice had a great year this year. So if you have two Rashi Races, I don't think that's a bad problem.
You say Rashi Race?
Ooh. No, I'm probably saying Rice, I think. I wish I was, though, because that's a brilliant joke, and I wish I'd thought of it. But I'm not that clever.
I'll be getting kicked out of another WhatsApp.
But no, I just think yes, he's my draft crush, but I also think he fits the mold of what the Chiefs would pick, and you can kind of I'm sort of based on the last few years worth of picks, not just the wide receiver at all positions. We like to pick that guy with a really high ceiling, but it sort of isn't quite there yet. We like to pick the question mark guy, let's call them that. So I just think he fits the mold.
Yeah, okay.
That's reasonable, yeah. Right, I'm conscious we've been like an hour and a quarter here, and that was a fairly lengthy podcast by our standards. Just to kind of round up, as you both look at the board here, is there anyone else on this board who you think, geez, I'd love to have them?
Full stop anywhere.
For me.
Anywhere on the board, go, actually, I'd like this guy in the six. Yeah, I'd love
don't,
to see him.
Don't say my guy, Chris. Don't say my guy. I'll let you go first, but don't say my guy.
Your guy.
I know who your guy is.
I won't say Phil's guy.
No, it's not. Say the guy you want, because that's not the one.
There's a couple of people on the board that I would like. I mean, it's no surprise that we're talking about wide receivers. I saw... this, you know, during the season, I was flicking through this completely legitimate box that I've got, watching some completely legitimate channels, very legal and everything. And I came across like the Patriots League, basically this kind of like this pretty much New England based American football games that were on, and saw a team, Holy Cross, playing, and I watched them quite a few times, and every time I watched them, there was one particular guy stood out. Aside from the quarterback, there was one guy that stood out that I thought, you know, this guy should be playing at a much higher level than he's playing now, and he looks like a man amongst boys and broke, you know, college records in abundance, and that we've got on the board as a fifth rounder in Jalen Coker, to the point that actually that. Yes, correct, wide receiver, to the point that actually I'd kind of, there was a particularly well-known draft scout or draft analyst working for PFN who actually had introduced him to him. He didn't know about this guy, and he kind of like, you know, fair play, you've found a bit of a diamond here. And he put him at, I think it was about 180 on their board initially after viewing him, Phil.
Yeah, it was about that, yeah.
Which is, you know, a top 200 player from a small school like that. I couldn't believe what I was seeing with this guy. And I thought, how is he flying under the radar? It's just stupid. So, yeah, him, very quickly, a couple of us in the running back class.
Would you double dip for wide receiver if we went wide receiver in the first round?
Yes. But what I would like to do is, I wouldn't necessarily want to go with like an X, and then, like, you know, again, Jalen Coker is another one who's a big body guy that I would put in that X mold. I would kind of maybe want to go with a bit more of a kind of an X and a bit more of a kind of nimble kind of move option at like slot Z kind of thing. Somebody who really, somebody really is kind of like a bit like a Tank Dell, if they're there, a budget Tank Dell, where, you know, not necessarily a run after the catch thing, but you know what, off the line, you ain't going to catch me. You know, line of scrimmage, I'm going to get separation like nobody's business, and you've got no idea where I've gone. You know, so bit like maybe it's a Malik Washington or a Jacob Cowing is a perfect example of that. That guy, you can't touch him. You just cannot get anywhere near him. But again, he's tiny, a gust of wind to blow him over. But I wouldn't necessarily hate that if we'd taken somebody like a big body guy in one of the early rounds. So I think very quickly in the running back class, I really like Jalen Wright. I am not massively high on some of the kind of higher prospects. I really think it's more fun watching people like a Rasheen Ali, Blake Watson, and a Tyrone Tracy, who actually, you watch his tape, it's the guy's first year at running back. He was actually formerly a wide receiver. And in 1 year, he looks like he's at home completely. And I think a couple of more years, he could have been well up there as a maybe second-round prospect.
Dave Brugler was talking about him on the Athletics podcast today as like one of his guys outside the top 100.
Hell yeah.
I have him back end of the sixth round on here.
Yeah, it's probably about right, to be fair. I mean, like you say, he's only got one season as a running back before he was a wide receiver, and it's just he's so fun, though. I mean, like he's brilliant, whether it's a stacked box, whether it's an empty box. He's elusive. In fact, he's brilliant.
The comparison they gave to him was Jet McKinnon. I thought was interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an interesting one, considering we've lost and we've got that kind of, unless you're going to use CEH as that receiving back, you know, Tyrone Tracy can do that kind of thing. I don't want a big back. I want somebody who's elusive. You know, we've got Pop, who's that kind of big bruiser. Give me a kind of dynamic, elusive back who's just going to break ankles. You know, he's got jump cuts aplenty. So, so those guys, very quickly, I like, you know, David White Jr. is another wide receiver that I really like. He is another small school guy, but great story about how he looked after his dying father and things, and kind of had to work while he was playing football as well. And a couple of others. Draft crush is not on your board, but my draft crush is Adisa Isaac, Penn State edge rusher opposite of Chop Robinson. I've got him higher on my board than him. I think he might actually end up going slightly higher than Chop by maybe a couple of positions. Yeah, I mean, he's actually, for me, he's cleverer than Chop. He doesn't have that kind of athleticism that Chop Robinson's got, that explosiveness initially, but his football and IQ and his production are just so much better. He's a fantastic player. He really is.
They have Isaac at 38 and Chop Robinson at 40.
Yeah, I mean, he's absolutely fantastic, and he's such a clever guy as well. You know, like I said, that football and IQ is just brilliant. And he's not that far off the kind of weight that the Chiefs would go for. I mean, he's about FAU's size and weight. Certainly weigh 254,
6'4".
Yeah, it's a bit below where they would normally go, but again, you know, Felix Anadiko's arm is a little bit below the 260 threshold that they would normally go for, so I would love to bring him in. In terms of just a few others, very quickly, linebackers, you know, you've got Trevon Wallace, absolutely love him. Jordan McGee's a great guy. I know that Phil's very high on Jordan McGee. Aaron Casey, as you know, is a good guy. I think he's a great player. And cornerbacks, there's actually Renardo Green's a good guy. I really like him. I think he fits our scheme very well. Kyrie Jackson from Oregon is another one. The other Florida State cornerback, and Jarrion Jones is another guy who is. Yeah, another guy.
He was one of the guys I was really high on. Was one of the guys I was going to say, yeah, really, really underrated. Had a great year this year. So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
fantastic.
So we have him back end of the fourth on here.
I think you'll probably have to give a third pick to get him to guarantee that you're going to get him with us picking at the back end of the round. But
yeah,
I would absolutely take him in the third.
I think both the Florida State cornerbacks are great, and they're both actually really effective in press man, which we play a lot more of. You know, the Chiefs play a lot more press man than zone. And very much in terms of finally the safety class. Jaden Hicks I like, but I've really got a soft spot for Tyke Smith out of Georgia. He's kind of Mr. Football personified. He hits hard. He's a leader. He's very much a younger version of kind of a Justin Reed, only a bit more athletic. So he's, you know, he's not one of these guys that you leave alone as kind of a centre fielder, that kind of free safety, but we don't tend to play that very much anyway. So he would be, I think it would be an absolutely fantastic fit as a replacement for Mike Edwards?
Yeah.
Yes, Mike Edwards. I was getting myself confused there with Mike Hughes, the former round one cornerback. But I think, fantastic. I love that guy. I think he's a great player. I'd love to see us bring somebody like Tyke Smith in.
Good stuff. Phil, couple of names?
Yeah, I'm going to actually go the opposite at running back need than what Chris said. Mine would be, I would absolutely give a round three or round four pick for Audric Estime. And the reason is because one of the areas we absolutely struggled in last year was the red zone. We were just struggling. The wide receivers struggled. And if it wasn't for Pacheco getting the touchdowns, we would have we were woeful in the red zone. We would have been even worse. Give me a Derrick Henry clone that is going to just run and bowl over people and just get that in the final 10 yards. I'm not going to trust Audric Estimator to run 60 yards downfield like we can with Pacheco, but I just want someone that can put the finishing touch on a great run.
He's top end of the fourth on here.
Yeah, I mean, I think we, like, again, because of where we are, we're probably going to have to give a third for it. I would be more than happy to do that. I just think that was a main area of struggle. It really was. We got into the red zone and we just couldn't finish things off. And he's a guy, he will just run people over. He's like a budget Derrick Henry. If not, I mean, one of the guys that pretty much nobody had heard of going into the combine, he absolutely lit it up, was Isaac Arendo. I probably don't need to say too much because everybody's talking about him at the moment, but probably around that similar range, we'll probably have to use that round three pick on him. But yeah, I'd be more than happy with him. He's very similar to Pacheco, so, you know, maybe not, but at the same time, I'd be more than happy to bring him in. Just to go through another couple of picks, Javon Foster, I've already mentioned, won't go into detail, but, you know, as a sort of roll the dice, left tackle, will he, won't he do it? Round five, round six pick. Yeah, happy to do that. Cornerback's an interesting one for me because I've been looking at quite a few cornerbacks. I do think there's a Legarius Sneed clone in this draft, and that's Mike Samuels.
Mike Samuels still. Just brilliant player.
He is absolutely hard hitting. He's fantastic. We won't get him at 64, but I would more than happy go wide receiver at 32. Trade up into sort of 45 to 52-ish and take Samuel still. I'd love that if we could get him somehow because, yeah, it's not a complete need of cornerback, but he immediately sort of fills that Legarius Sneed role. And if he needs a bit of time, we've got enough other guys that can give him that sort of time to develop and learn. Again, you mentioned Jarrion Jones, love him. And Cam Hart, and I'm not sure whether I'm talking with, drum roll, Hart overhead because I didn't do that on, do you know what, I didn't do that on purpose. I seen it and I took the shot there, but I went to Dublin to watch Notre Dame play. Estime was the standout star, but Cam Hart, I just started watching a lot of Notre Dame stuff after that, and he really stood out to me. He's another, you know, he's another dice roll guy. He's not a same restore, a Jarian Jones. I think you'd give a fourth round or a fifth round pick on him, and it's Willie O'Woney do the job. But yeah, he's a guy I really like. Safeties, yeah, Tyke Smith can 100% get on board with that. I think he's a fantastic player. I also don't mind, again, I've you can see my soft spot. I've got a soft spot for these roller dice, will they, won't they players. Just, I really love to see these late round guys come into a team and shine. And my two late round guys at safety, which I do think is one of the positions we need to pick up, is Trey Taylor. I think Trey Taylor's
around.
Yeah, I think, again, I always try and go around earlier just because of picking so late. And we actually don't have a sixth-round pick, do we? So, you know, you're talking with a fifth-round pick. Trey, yeah, I think he will 100% do a job. Safety for me is a position of need because Justin Reed is fantastic. But it worried me when I saw that statistically he was our worst safety because he will start every snap because of the leader that he is. Brian Cook, absolutely fantastic player. Still got a slight question mark over his head for me, just... What he did last year before his injury was brilliant, but it's just a small sample size to say, yes, that's my starter.
And as well, yeah.
Honestly, yeah, absolutely. So Trey Taylor, if not, and you really wanted to go super deep and sort of pick a safety of around 6 or 7 pick, he's not on your board, but Omar Brown from Nebraska is just, for that sort of round 6, round 7 pick, he is an absolute steal. Again, dice roll guy, but I think
special teams.
Yeah, I just think he looks brilliant for the late rounds. And yeah, I'm looking around. DT, the defensive tackle was a position that I was slightly worried in, but with the re-signing of Nardi and Dana, I don't think it's anywhere near as needed as what it was a couple of weeks ago. But yeah, I just love to watch these late round guys. Round 4 to round 7, that's my favourite rounds to watch because I love to watch those guys come in and just excel.
First round's boring. Who needs that? Everybody wants, like, you know, it's like round 2 and 3. And then after that, they're kind of like, where do you find round 4 and 7? It could be anywhere. The 7th round, honestly, of a seed. If you go around 4, 4th round.
Brett Veach has got history. Brett Veach, he does not find some gems, sort of. Even you go round 3 to 7, he just finds gems. I mean, I'm not putting my house down on another Pacheco, but I mean, if we got half a Pacheco in round 5, I'll be happy with that. So I've got all the faith in the world in Brett Veach.
And the two very, very quickly to finish, that two people I missed out that actually I think are such fun players to watch and I love. And actually, one of them is Michael Hall Jr., defensive tackle. He's just got a bit like, for you last year, Neil, Kalaji Kansi was a big crush of yours. He's very much like Kalaji Kansi, a bit undersized, but he's got that massive, kind of that first step explosiveness. He's got great hands.
Mid-second on our board.
Yeah, I think he's just such a fun watch. I'd love for us to take him. But one who I would move up to about 40-odd for, not sure other people might necessarily agree, but Ben Sinnott, tight end from Kansas State. Oh, my God. I would pound the table for that guy big style.
We have him top of the third on here.
Oh, I thought I'd take him mid to early second. I love him. Honestly, I think he's brilliant. I think he'll go a lot higher than people think.
He's an interesting one because I was quite high on a couple of the tight ends. One of the ones that I kind of, you know, I'm talking dice roll again. Theo Johnson from Penn State, who started to move up the draft boards. When I first started looking into him, he's like a round 6 guy, and now he's like round 4 maybe.
Yeah.
But I think with signing... was it Irv Smith as well as, you know, we've got Noah Gray, we've got Travis Kelce, an older Travis Kelce, and I somehow I know we're going to go into the season with Blake Bell. It's just going to happen. I don't think that we will. Realistically, I would love a Theo Johnson or a Ben Sinnott, but realistically, I don't think we're going to take a tight end. It just doesn't seem like a good use of a pick, especially, you know, around 3 pick or whatever Ben Sinnott would cost.
Yeah, although Ben Sinnott was one of the Chiefs' top 30 visits.
Honestly, it would make me more than happy to see it happen. But yeah, I just don't see it. Plus, a lot of the guys we've just listed, we kind of had around round 3, which undeniably means we're going to sign a guy that nobody's ever heard of in round 3.
Fifth rounder.
Yeah, I'm excited to see.
Tyquan Thornton to the Patriots.
Literally. I'm excited to see the disappointment in all our faces. Yeah.
Yeah, there will be disappointment when we trade out of 32 on draft night.
Do you know what? I'm not against it. I'm honestly not against it. I've done No, because it gets me Mike Samers still, hopefully. That's why I'm not against it. So let's
see. I will be able to stay up and watch it and then have to get up early next morning to go for my speed awareness course, which I forgot about that I'd booked on that day. So now I'm thinking I can't really stay up all night watching it. So, but, you know, 35 and a 30, people, I wasn't doing stupid speeds. I was doing 35 and a 30, which I think really is just
okay, Rashi.
Ridiculous. Yeah, Rashi race. 35 miles an hour, we're looking at the skin of a rice pudding and might smash up a Lambo.
Right, an hour and a half. That's I'm going to cut us out now. That's that'll do us. Hopefully, folks, you enjoyed that and there was some useful information there. We will do the live mock sometime next week, Tuesday or Wednesday, I would imagine, because, hey, the draft's on Thursday, so there's no point doing it on Thursday. So I would imagine Tuesday or Wednesday. So keep an eye out for that. I will stick our draft boards up on the socials, so that you can see them and see our workings, because we do like to show kind of the thinking behind, which hopefully this show has done, the thinking behind the draft board and kind of where we think the Chiefs might go. We're just trying to replicate the process here. We're not saying the Chiefs are definitely going to pick these guys, but it's these are the kind of conversations that they will be having in the building to say, right, you know, where do we see ourselves going? What are the possible scenarios? And that's what we're trying to achieve with this show this evening. And then again, with the live mock. Right, gents, thanks for your time, Christopher. Thanks as always. Oh, there's some lovely love hearts on the screen there. Who did that?
That's a critical one all over that.
Thank you, Chris. Much appreciated. Phil, it was great to have you on. You've been nagging me for fucking ages. And I finally got you on. But
when I played hard to get, I haven't asked you in a long while, so I played hard to get and look, you came crawling straight
back.
Bullshit,
it was just the prospect of I was desperate.
That'll have to be in the title, Chris, won't it? But unfortunately we have to agree, so we'll have to come on again, Chris, and we'll have to just completely disagree on everything.
Let's have this same discussion in inverted commas next week on the live draft. I'm sure we'll have more 100%. People that just contribute as well.
I wouldn't be surprised if Tomo was around for next week as well.
Yeah, I would have thought. So he doesn't miss it, does he?
No, he hasn't missed one yet. Right. Thanks for listening, folks. Much appreciated that you've managed to get through an hour and 31 minutes and 44 seconds. That is an impressive going by anyone's standards. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening, and we'll say from one kingdom to another goodbye for now.